Good morning, we're beginning the book of Malachi. Who is Malachi? That's a good question. He is the final prophet. He is the last of the Tri Asar, and he lived during the period of the Second Temple. According to one opinion in the Talmud, Malachi is also Ezra. Ezra HaSofer is also Malachi. There's an opinion that Malachi is Mordechai. So, who is Malachi? Malachi, Chazal bring us a machlokes. He was a prophet not only during the time of the destruction of the temple, but also into the time when the second temple was built. And he was one of the men of the great assembly. So he was there, either he was Ezra or he was with Ezra. And together with the men of the great assembly, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi compiled the Shmoneh Esrei.
Mordechai was also on that time?
Correct.
He was also a member of the great assembly?
Correct.
Where is the
Sanhedrin? What? Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, the men of the great assembly. And the book of Malachi is going to leave us with the final message that's supposed to hold us throughout this exile until we come back. So what is the final message? Let's see. Masa devar Adonai el Yisrael beyad malachim. The following prophecy was given to Israel in the hands of Malachi, and it says beyad malachi. This is something that was given to him a while back, and now he's supposed to give it over. It's something he held inside himself until the right time came to say it over. So, what is the prophecy? Ahavti etchem, amar Adonai. Hashem says, I love you. What a message. I love you. That's the message. The story begins with one sentence. Ahavti etchem. Now you will answer, v'amarteim b'ma ahavtanu. You'll ask, in what sense do you love us? Is it because of who we are? Is it because of what we do? So Hashem says to the people of Israel, you'll ask me, why is it that you love us? Yes.
Why is it saying in the past tense? You're saying he loves me. He says, ahavti, as if he's mad at us now.
Ahavti could mean past to the exclusion of present. Ahavti could mean past to the inclusion of present. I've always loved you.
Okay.
Now let's frame our conversation. When are we talking about? We're talking about just after the destruction of the first temple. We're just starting the rebuilding of the second temple. What was Israel's response to the destruction of the first temple? Lama lanetzach tishkachenu ta'azveinu le'orech yamim. Hashem doesn't love us anymore. Hashem's left us. He's forgotten us. He's forsaken us. Vatomer Tzion, azavani Hashem v'Hashem shichechani. What does Zion say? God's left me. He's forsaken me. He's forgotten me. Hatishkach isha ulam merachem ben bitna. That's not so, God says. Does a mother forget her baby? Does she forget to have mercy to love her little suckling? No. Even if these ever get forgotten, I won't forget you, Hashem says. So now the Navi comes and says, Ahavti, I always loved you. Yes, there was a destruction. Yes, you had 70 years of exile. But it's a consistent. And this idea is an idea developed in the Drasha Saran. We learned here on Friday a few months ago. Sometimes we assume when something's said in the past tense, it's to the exclusion of the present and future, and sometimes it's to the inclusion. Now, we have a small problem here. Alon walked in, and he didn't get any ragalach. So if you guys could just pass it back to him, we could continue. So, this is an interesting question. Why do you love me? Sounds like a man and a woman talking. He says, I love you. And she says, why? Oh, don't you love that question? Halo achisav li Yaakov neum Adonai va'ohav et Yaakov. Hashem says, I'll tell you. There were two brothers, Esav and Yaakov. They shared father and mother. And one of them I loved. And the other one I didn't. Ve'et Esav saneiti. But I hate Esav. Vasim et harav shemamav et nachlato letanot midbar. I've turned his mountains to desolation. They aren't flourishing like the mountains of Israel. And his inheritance, his heritage has become letanot midbar. It's been a place where the jackals of the desert wander. So, what was the answer? We asked, why do you love us? And he says, well, there were two brothers and I love you. What kind of answer is that? What kind of answer is that? So we learned a long Drashas Haran on this piece about the difference between Yaakov and Esav and our relationship to the Ribono Shelolam. Notice that Hashem singles out Esav and Yaakov because our contention with Yishmael is different than Esav. Yishmael is Ben Amai, is all of the son of the maid. He doesn't share the same parents as Yitzchak. So there isn't that much to talk about. But Yaakov and Esav, they're twins. They're twins sharing the same father, the same mother. And so when we ask Hashem, why do you love us? Hashem says, ah, but I do love you. And this answer could be understood on a few levels. One level is, Hashem says, look, I chose you. I made you my chosen people, and I hate Esav. Look at what I did for you. Look at what I did to Esav. One possible answer is, imagine you're talking to your wife, and you say, I love you. And she says, why? Well, let me tell you, any answer you give at this point is problematic. I love you because you're beautiful. So if I'm not beautiful, you won't love me. I love you because you're kind. So if I won't be kind, you won't love me. I love you because you're a great mother. So when our kids grow up, you won't love me. What are you going to answer? So what's the real answer? The real answer is I love you for who you are. I love you, and it's not about a specific. It's about an encompassing idea. That's ahava she'inat luya b'davar. Ahava she'inat luya b'davar is when I love the person. It's not about a specific thing. It's about the person as a whole. And so that's Hashem's answer to us. Mohavet Yaakov, that's the point. I love Yaakov. And this gives us a tremendous shot in the arm. Notice, what was our challenge from the time of the destruction of the Second Temple till today? Our challenge has consistently been the tormentation of the nations. God doesn't love you anymore. You're no longer the chosen people. Look at how you're suffering. How could you think you're the chosen people? Yeah, there's a famous picture of a Nazi beating an old Jew, and he tells him, tell me you're the chosen people now. Even 70 years ago, this was part of what was being said. The Christian church said it for centuries. You see, they're not the chosen people. Look at how they're suffering. That's why they had such difficulty when the state of Israel was declared. Wait a second, this isn't supposed to happen. So until 67, they said, well, that's because they don't have Jerusalem, and they don't have the Kever Avos, they don't have Mar Samach Pela, they don't have Kever Rachel. Then 67, they really had a problem. Wait a second, that's not supposed to happen either. So that's why they're always interested in us dividing Jerusalem, so that it's not like we've come back. That's their claim. What are they going to say? So there are those two. It's divided. I was talking about the Catholic Church. You're talking about the evangelicals. Ahavti etchem. The final message the Navi Malachi says is, I love you. And I hate Esav. Ki tomar Edom hushashnu. If you say, yeah, we we've been impoverished, but we're going to rebuild ourselves. We're going to rebuild this economy. We're getting out of this. Ko amar Adonai Tzevaot heima yivnu v'ani eros. Hashem says, okay, you'll build, I'll destroy. V'kareu lahem gevul risha v'ha'am asher za'am Adonai ad olam. People will recognize this nation is gevul risha. Its borders are suffused with evil, and this is the nation that Hashem has poured his wrath against forever. When's this going to happen? We don't know. Ve'eineichem tirehena. Your eyes will witness it. This needs a lot of work. I don't have a clear picture, but I'll give you a little bit of my the little bit of understanding I do have. Ve'techazena einenu b'shuvcha le'tzion berachamim. What do we daven? Let our eyes witness how you return to Zion with mercy. Why? Why don't we say v'techazena einenu about a tzemach David, about the Yerushalayim ircha, about Hashiva shofteinu, about refa'enu? You have 18 different topics you're going to talk about in Shmona Esrei. You don't say v'techazena einenu about any of them, right? You don't say our eyes should witness peace in Israel. Sim shalom tova uvracha. We don't say v'techazena einenu. Where do we say v'techazena einenu? B'shuvcha l'tzion b'rachamim. So what's so important about that? Why do our eyes have to witness it? Question number one. Question number two. The city of Sodom is overturned, and Lot is saved, and Hashem tells Lot, you don't look back. You're not allowed to see the destruction of the wicked. Avram, he can look, and that's what happens. Avram does look out at Sodom as it is destroyed. Veshkem Avram Babukir, it says Avram El Amakom, he got back to the same place he had been. Vayashkef, he looked out, Al Pnei Chol HaKikar, he looks and sees the valley, he sees the smoke rising, he sees the destruction. Why is that so important? Why is it so important that Lot not look back and Avram can look back?
Because Avram asked for the sage.
Okay. Yeah.
Also, Lot, they didn't deserve to look back, right? Because he was also he wasn't saved by his own accord. He was saved because of Avram.
That's true, but why is that so weighty?
Because it's like, you know, someone who didn't deserve something is taking pleasure in something that he really didn't deserve.
I don't think he took pleasure. His own children were killed in stone. It was his family. Why?
He was saved on the technicality. He's going to get haughty and think that he is good, but he's going to see everybody else is bad.
Okay. So I prefer to leave the question hanging. What's so important about seeing? Why is it that techazen einin b'shuvchal tzion? Why is it about the destruction of Sodom and Amora? Why is it asher yitem et Mitzrayim ayom lo tosifun lirotam od ad olam? When we leave Egypt, Hashem says, you see the Egyptians? You're never going to see them again. I don't want you to see Egypt again. What's that all about? why is it that our sages tell us, don't look at an evil person, don't look at his face? When they asked one of the rabbis in the Talmud in Megillah, they asked him, why do you have such longevity? One of the things he said is, because I never looked at the face of an evil person. And why is it over here that we are promised that we will witness, we will see the destruction of Edom? V'atem tomeru yigdal Adonai me'al ligvul Yisrael. And you will then declare, yigdal Hashem, may Hashem be elevated. His elevation should be that he will be recognized beyond our borders. Me'al ligvul Yisrael, beyond the borders of Israel. Yes.
Can a Jew be also like an accountant or an evil person?
Sure.
Do you assume a Jew is like good on
the inside? No. Jews can be evil too, 100%. Not only could they be evil, but they could be most evil, unfortunately. Yes.
Can a Tinoch Shenishba be evil?
Yes. Tinoch Shenishba only gives a person a certain amount of understanding. You're not going to say because he's a Tinok Shenishba, he's a murderer. Because he's a Tinok Shenishba, he's a sadist. Because he's a Tinok Shenishba, he doesn't understand Shabbos. Fine, we can grant him that. But we still hold him to the minimal seven Noachide laws, we still hold him to being a moral person. The fact that he's a Tinok Shenishba allows him a certain amount of understanding.
So one of the seven Noachide laws is like Yilurayot. And in this day and age, it's like, it's not, in the secular world, it's not held in the same level as murder. And so technically, he doesn't understand the Hashibut of the importance of not doing whatever with whoever. And can he really be considered a Rasha?
That's a Galuya, man. I don't think he's like. Is it technically Galuya or is it just sleeping around? Like, if it's
no. Adultery. For them, adultery, yeah, incest. That would be Gilui Arayot. For yeah.
There's still a lot of people do that.
What?
What is it considered for them to be married, though? I mean,
we're going off on too many tangents. Back to our prophecy. So what do we see so far? Shem says, I love you. I hate Esav. Esav will be destroyed. I will continue destroying them because they represent wickedness, and you will merit to see it, and you will declare, may Hashem be elevated, and it may be beyond our borders. And there's another understanding here, which is, may our borders expand. That it's not only, not the first understanding which we said, that Hashem should be recognized beyond our borders, but rather our borders should expand. As we have a tradition, as the Navi Yecheskel tells us, the land of Israel is still going to grow. Jerusalem will reach Damascus. We're headed for a growth spurt. Yes?
I was going to say, before we leave that topic, I think I understand the same thing. It's like, in our day and age, like when the Jews were at like Har Sinai, right, they heard what they saw, and they saw what they heard, right? So like, I learned that like that means that like in our day and age, we only hear God, because what's in the forefront of us right now is what we see is the galut. It's like God is like hearing is like a secondary like nature to us. It's something that behind us, something that's not really infused within our lives. So I guess when we see it, it's going to be in the forefront, and everything else will be in the background.
Very nice, very nice. I hear. Very nice. So, what Alon is really assuming, and I think it's a correct assumption, is that the prophet is taking us beyond the moment. And this is a great gift. Imagine Avraham Avinu marries Sarah at age 25, 30. We don't have it in the verses when they got married. Now they're going to be married for 70 years without children. If God would have told him at the beginning, 70 years from now you can have a kid, that would have been okay. Imagine a guy is dating. He starts dating at 20, and God tells him, you're going to get married at 50. So, okay, I could live with that. I know when the end time is. I know there is an end. I know I'm getting out of this. One of the great difficulties we have is that no one's there to tell us that it's going to be okay. I got an email this week from a girl who is undergoing cancer treatment, and Baruch Hashem is going well. And I'm just thinking of the fear that she must have. The girl's in 11th or 12th grade. And finally she thinks she finished the chemo, but she knows that there's this little boogeyman there that she has to wonder if he's ever coming back. Right? So she's finished this round, then we daven that she never has it again, right? But there's that fear of the unknown. One of the great challenges in life is that we have that fear of the unknown. And if anyone could give us a guarantee of what the future holds, then life is much more palatable. So Hashem doesn't tell us a date, but nonetheless Hashem gives us a shot in the arm with the final prophecy, telling us this is where you're headed. Like Alon said, it's going to be okay. There's going to be a time when you will be able to see that I'm running the world, along the lines of what we daven for on Rosh Hashanah. V'yedah kol po'ul ki ata fe'alto, v'yavin kol yitzur ki ata yitzarto. Let every creature realize that Hashem is the one that created him and formed him. And we also ask that the rish'a tichle min ha'aretz, that there should cease to be evil on earth. So we're davening for that future, which the Navi Malachi says, remember, A, I love you. B, it's going to get better. So those are two messages that really give us koach to contend with all the evil we have to contend with. Think of the Jews in the Spanish Inquisition. I often ask myself, how did Jews stand up to that? I started a personal project a few years ago, speaking to the few Holocaust survivors that I know, and asking them, I tell them, look, I understand every person who stopped maintaining Torah and mitzvot after the Holocaust, I have no question. But I'm wondering, those people who continued observing Torah and mitzvot after the Holocaust, how'd they do it? Last night, I was visiting Shiva across the street from the Machon. Baruch Schwartz was a man, 92 years old. He used to come here every morning to learn. You guys probably saw him. A short man, spoke like very tough. No. So at the Shiva, his son pulled out a sefer, and in the sefer it says a whole song of praise to Hashem, and he writes that this is the first sefer he bought after the Holocaust. And he writes a song there, thanking Hashem for taking him out and asking Hashem that he should merit to build a family and succeed in settling in the land of Israel and continue living an Orthodox life. And you read it and you ask yourself, how could a person do this? 1 year after the Holocaust, he's celebrating an anniversary and he says, I've merited to buy a book. It happens to be the Bnei Yisachar, the Hasidish Sefer. But he wrote a whole song in the, and they have it. The family has his song. I don't know where people get such strength from. But one of the places, one of the answers I've received is the capacity to see beyond the moment. Meaning, my wife's grandfather told me that when he entered Auschwitz, so he turned to one of the older people and he asked him, how do you get out of here? So the man pointed to the chimney stack and he said, you see that smoke? That's how you leave. That's your way out. You're going to leave as smoke. And I ask people if they're comfortable sharing with me, and one of the things they say is, when you could believe that there's something better still coming, and you keep at it, then that gives you strength to keep at it. The Navi gives us that hope. The Navi says it's going to get better. I will abolish evil from the earth. And there's one more point. You'll see as parents that one of the hardest things is that sometimes you have to do things that are hurtful to your children. Sometimes they have too many sweets, you have to take them away. Sometimes you have to yell at them. Sometimes you have to put them to bed and they want to stay awake. There are all kinds of things that the kids don't like. So some of them are run-of-the-mill and some are harder. And sometimes a kid could really be upset at you. What are you doing to me? About a year ago, one of the kids had an infection in a tooth, and it went up, and his head started getting swollen, and it became dangerous because the swelling was approaching the brain. So we had to go to the hospital on a Friday, and we ended up being there Shabbos, for him to get antibiotics intravenous to put down the swelling, and then they could take out the tooth. So the kid was dead scared of needles. And therefore he was dead scared of the doctor. What are you going to do with the kid? How are you going to work this with him? One of the things you do to the kid is you tell him, you know I love you. You know I'm going to do what's best for you. I'm not going to let anyone hurt you. We're going to work this out together. I remember being with my son when he had to have his eyebrow stitched. So that's pretty scary. They take this sharp thing and they're sewing up his eyebrow. And the kid's scared as anything, right? And who's going to hold him? You want a strange nurse to hold him? You're going to hold him. How do you help him contend with it? Aside from telling him stories as he does it. As you hold him, you hug him, you kiss him, and you tell him, I love you, and we're going to get through this together. What's Hashem doing to us before we enter the exile? All the stitching and the needles and everything we're going to have to undergo, Hashem says two messages. I love you and it's going to get better. Those are the same messages you're going to find yourself telling your kids. Don't worry, in a minute it's over. The doctor's almost finished. And I love you. Right? So that's the tremendous message of Malachi. Ahavti etchem amar Hashem. Hashem says, I love you. And then Hashem says, it's going to get better. I am going to destroy all that is wicked. And we'll pick up here, Bezrat Hashem, next week.